Derek Jensen on the third episode of The Infinitesimal Dialectic. He's done extensive study on the degradation of our environment. And if you're not aware of it, I think you're one of the most important philosophers of our time trying to express this. And for me, as an artist, when we talked last time, it was about long-form thinking, right? And how I equated that into long-form music. And it really, I think it's the language of the land to start from there, is what, how I feel music is. And that could be your home, your travel, all these certain things, or how to travel. Music plays a kind of unique role in our memory. But I thought maybe we could also start with, maybe we can express to people who are listening what even the idea of long-form thinking is as well.
Okay. I think we're living in a time of sound bites and slogans, and it doesn't really matter whether the slogan is Make America Great Again, or Black Lives Matter, or 5240 or Fight, or Remember the Maine, or Coke is the Real Thing. That all of those are the slogans are a way to encapsulate a lot of complex information into one catchy phrase. And I mean this in a value neutral sense. And it can be both, I just mean that it is. And the problem, the good thing about that is it encapsulates a lot of information and there's a lot of resonance with a lot of complex information behind it. And the bad news is that it is three or four words that are standing in for a lot of complex information. And it's fine to have a slogan to help you remember. In fact, that's one reason these slogans are so ubiquitous, is that that's how we learn. When we're children, we have sing songs sung to us and we learn mnemonics and but the problem is that the mnemonic is not the whole thing. And there's a lot of complex information that gets lost. So it's fine if you have a mnemonic to help you remember, but it's not so fine if the mnemonic then comes to stand in and replace the complex thinking that goes into the entire subject, such that, I can say shorthand, this culture is murdering the planet. Okay. And then you can do a book, and I have done books on each one of those words. Maybe not really. But you have this culture. Okay. So what does that mean? Let's define it. And let's spend an entire book defining it. And you have, what does it mean to be murdering the planet? And do I mean murdering? And then, so let's discuss killing versus murdering. Let's discuss the complex details behind it. And long-form thinking is increasingly disappearing going into hibernation, going into hiding.
It's disappearing quick. I agree with you.
And that's harmful because we have complex issues that we need to discuss. And there's a lot of ways we can talk about this. One of them is that, I had a long and wonderful relationship with my mom, and some of the best conversations that we ever had were when we would take long trips in the car, because there would be, like if we're sitting around the house, we talk for a while and then we watch a baseball game, or we talk for a while and then we watch an old episode of Inspector Morse. But in the car, there's no, we would talk for a while and then we would just sit and look at the scenery, and then if we're driving, and then, you know, there's still 4 hours to fill. And I think often of something that when I was in my 20s, I knew the cowboy poet Waddy Mitchell. He's a friend of mine. And one of the things he used to say on stage all the time was, you know, we'd be sitting around the campfire, just all the cowboys, and there's no TV or anything, so we had to talk to each other. And then one more thing, and this might get us into music a little bit, is that he also said that he thinks that sitting around talking was the origin of poetry, because he said you can tell a joke once, but if you put the joke to rhyme, they want to hear it every night. And so this is sort of a segue for me into, I mean, that's one of the things with a really good slogan too. It carries a rhythm. There's a certain 54-40 or fight that there's a rhythm, and this is moving us into the territory of music. I want to say one more thing and then I'll shut up for a minute, which is that, one of my writing teachers was John Keeble, my best and favorite writing teacher. And, his wife played in the orchestra. She was chief viola, or first chair viola, I guess. Mm-hmm. First chair?
First chair, yes.
Pop banana viola. And she, so music infused his life and music infused his thinking. And I remember once, he was the one who introduced me to the understanding that music can enter our bodies in ways that words can't, because music doesn't necessarily need to be translated. Word, I say this word, and then you have to hear the word, and then you have to translate the word into whatever meaning it has in your being. And music can just penetrate your guts all by itself and doesn't need to be. I mean, sure, there are different cultures and you become acculturated to different music, and there are music from some cultures that sounds really strange to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of some of the Chinese music and,
right.
Or I've heard some archaeologists found some pottery or something with some musical notes on or some, I don't remember how it came about, but basically for the first time in a couple thousand years, they played some Greek song, ancient Greek. I don't know how they found it.
Oh, right.
Just found music or something. Anyway, and it sounded pretty strange, you know, it wasn't what I'm accustomed to.
Right. The patterns and the, well, this is a great place to start. I mean, I can go down.
Yeah, so take off wherever you want.
No, that's a great point. At that, from what I understand in my reading and the different ages of arts, especially music, up until more recently in the shorter term of things, it was really presented in a sacred manner, be it the shaman, the religious, the chants of the church. Some of the things you're talking about are modal ways, and they were like practices. You can find them within Pythagoras kind of stuff, where a group of people would get together and they would lay patterns in certain scales to enhance thinking. It wasn't just about enjoyment. It was to enhance other arts that they were working into. And that's a Western Hermetic tradition, which is in different areas. And it's also a Chinese and, we could say Hindu tradition. But when you get into those things, there are these different elements that play a role, and I mean literally elements, because elements play, that's how we looked at mathematics then, fire, water, air, and earth, of course. And so they all have their resonance, so to speak. More recently, it's funny, when you first were talking about long form, there's another element that's in there that is, we have kind of left it off the chart, which is chi or electricity or energy or any of these kinds of things, that it's its own element. And this can be produced in vibration or other sorts. And so what we're, if you read some of this text, because you can't just like read it in our, like you said, it's not in our time, right? We have different rhythms, different tones, different constructs of how we think about things. Music played a vital role in our life. And I think it fits into this element of energy, is what I'm saying. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm thinking about my niece is a doctor of traditional Chinese medicine.
Okay.
And she learned in Beijing and talks a lot. Whenever she talks about medicine, I would be surprised if the word qi doesn't come up once every few minutes.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty ubiquitous in there. Yeah.
So go ahead.
No, that's it.
No, that's pretty much it here too.
It's
the importance of, well, of people.
I get what you're saying now. It's more looked like the idea of movement is the same idea. So it's expressed in this way of movement. There has to be flow, right? And technically, depending on what kind of science you believe in, traditionally in that world, movement is translated in our words as electricity. We know now by measuring that we have these little things inside of us that electrically charge our muscles to move. Like it's an actual charge. What I'm finding is if you can balance those things in your field, what we call the vibe, sounds kooky, but it's a way to transfer energy through you smoothly. That's what we're traditionally using it for before, but in the short term thinking where you're talking about, it's very for a surface feeling. I feel good in my lower torso for a few minutes. You get the energy is a very short term rise up, come down. And the person I work with in music, we started with just trying to do longer music, learning about it in that sense. But as we were learning about it and doing it with people, we learned this has an effect on our actual thinking and how we have relationships with people and how it can actually form with the land. And I'm not an expert on it, but the more now we traditionally write our music in a forest, it's different. It's literally different by transferring that information, what you're saying, in a longer span, and then be able to express that without those words you're talking about. It's almost like stuttering. You know, when we talk, it's almost like a stutter. But when it's music, it has a flow, like words on a paper. Follow what I'm...
I'm thinking a few things. One of them is that I really like what you say about the about land being longer, land providing, land being longer form music. And I just think about the longer cycles. I'm thinking about something that Vine Deloria said, that he said that he was a Dakota man, wrote a bunch of books and
wonderful books. God is Red is right. Is that one of them? Important.
I think he had the best titles of any writer ever. God is Red, to die for your sins. Anyway, one of the things he talked about is that when you get old, you know, you have different roles in your life at different ages. And one of the roles that you're supposed to take on for your community when you get old is you now have lived through enough, you've lived long enough that you can begin to put together patterns. Mm-hmm. And that, I believe, Paul, but we can call it this if we want, is what one would call wisdom. This right. ability to have put together longer term patterns and to hold the memories for, you know, ever since my mom died, like the other day I was thinking, I don't remember what it was, but I was thinking, oh yeah, I remember what it was. I had not thought of, Husky or Kamiai, Idaho for a couple decades, but I thought very seriously about moving there at one point. And they came up because a friend of mine is moving up that region. And I immediately thought, Mom, do you remember when I was thinking about moving to, and then of course I couldn't ask her because she's dead. And I'm, well, we can have that discussion another time. But
yes, we can.
But the point is that that's one of the roles of elders is to hold those memories for us, for right. all of us. And the reason I bring all this up is because I've lived on this land for 20 years and there are patterns I have begun to see, but there are other patterns that even in 20 years you're not going to see, and even in 100 years you're not going to see. I think of something that Winona LaDuke said about there was a story among her people that every 6 or 7 human generations, so every, 150 years,
mm-hmm.
there would be a major migration of, I don't remember what it was, Fisher or Martin or some, I believe it was some member of the Weasel family.
And okay.
the point is you would have, that's a longer pattern in the land. And
right.
When you have trees, so the trees here are, they were probably cut in the 50s. I'm sorry, the 70s. So they're about
second or third growth, do you think?
It's third growth.
Third growth.
Yeah. It was cut once in about 1910 somewhere. It was cut once before chainsaws because you can see the springboard notches.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they were using
wood in
the old growth. And so that was pre-1930 somewhere before that. And then it was cut again in the 70s and now is growing back. But it's still, from the perspective of a tree, these trees are really young.
Oh,
they're 50 years out of 2000. So that would be like 2.5 years out of 100. So that would be like, I mean, they've done 2% of their life.
Right.
And, okay. So the point is that there are, I'm just going to throw this back to you to bring this back to music. I'm just talking about land.
Mm-hmm.
Land has all sorts of different times going on it because you also have hummingbirds whose hearts beat like, I don't know how many times per minute and whose lives, who actually perceive things. I mean, who's perceived things so fast that if they watched a movie, they would see individual frames.
Right. Right. And
so you have all these different time scales happening in wild nature. And I'm just going to throw this whole mess over to you to talk about music.
Well, no, it's a wonderful place. Hummingbirds, I found already, they're an interesting animal when you, play harmonics. They're very particular. Every beast I find has a resonance they care for, a note or a harmonic or a dissonance. It just depends on what it is. Like, we've experimented with enough where literally we've had owls stop right above our head if it's a certain note. Sometimes I don't know, but sometimes you figure it out. But hummingbirds are very specific. Harmonics are very something about it in their whistle or whatever, just like a red dot kind of thing. If you had a red dot, hummingbird will explore the red dot. But harmonics are an interactive thing, and I always wonder, when we're doing the language of music, because, for example, what you're talking about is, in more recent times we have learned that the plants open up at a specific time in the morning and a specific time at night to receive their water. Specifically, a liminal space of evening or the morning, right? And the shift happens when those birds start whistling. The vibration literally opens up the ducts more to absorb more water. This is an actual symbiotic relationship that's happening. So I'm thinking on the deep time of things you're talking about, I know as an artist when you're playing that, and if you let go, just like if anyone does a trance shamanic dance or anything where you get yourself into a meditative state, you can access this deeper time, but it's not in a written sense. Does this make sense? It's not like reading his, it's more like a felt sense kind of presentation of the land.
So there are a bunch of things I'm wondering if you can tell me more about. I'm going to start with the last one, which is, what do you mean by accessing deep time?
Go ahead.
And the others were, I would love to hear very specific examples of different species or beings responding to specific, like when you say hummingbirds respond to harmonics, do you mean that if one person plays a C, another person plays an E, and another person plays a G, so you have a chord, then mm-hmm. they like that? And do they like major chords more than minor chords? It's like, this is really fascinating. So that's the other question is, can you just give me specific, like, what notes made what sort of owl stop? It's just...
Right, okay, I got you. I feel what you're saying. So, deep time, I could put more like this. We think in our own time, which is, like you were talking about earlier, is 150 years. We barely saw a tree grow or whatnot. Deeper time, I'm talking like a forest is a millennia old, and it has a language. The language that we access is not our words. It's vibration and air. And you can be with those beings and understand the land memory. It's not a soul memory, as some people in the religions will talk about our karma, or we remember from a past life, if that's what you have a faith in and believe in. There's a land memory. And you can access these land memories. Sometimes I think some of us confuse those things with our soul memory, because the land has a memory of the people that's died on it, the trees that have lived through it. There's all these things. And I've noticed when you're in this musical state, it's kind of like when you spot a certain species or a certain plant you're looking for, more is revealed to you in the forest. Your eyes are more sensitive to, some animal walked this path for the last 300 years. You're more sensitive to these nuances because your vibration's there, if that makes time. That makes sense on the deep time idea?
Yeah, it reminds me of, there's a place about 10 miles north of here called Yontaket, which was the center of the universe, or is the center of the universe for the Powell people.
Right.
And there was and when I first moved here, I knew Yontaket was up there somewhere, but I didn't know where. And I just would go out walking different places, and I, you know, would go to the ocean, I'd go to the old growth, I'd go all over. And there were this series of ponds that I approached from the south that, for whatever reason, I started having these really intense dreams about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't dreaming about the other places I was going. And then those dreams resolved when I went from the north side and I discovered that this was Yontaket, which was, the center of the universe and also, a massacre site. And, many of the Indians had been, many of the Talawa had been, chased from the massacre site and had, taken refuge in the ponds and breathed through reeds. And there were so many dead people that the water turned red. And I didn't know any of that, but my point is that something was telling me something in the dream.
Right.
That's one part. And another part is then I told this story for many, many years about Yontaket being the site of the massacre. And at one point then, the land said to me, and I don't really remember how, it said a couple things. One is like, you know, there are massacre sites all over. This one happened to be humans, but there's plenty of others. And there's plenty of others of humans, and there's plenty of others of non-humans, too.
Sorry, I shouldn't be laughing, but right, so there is.
You know, so, and then the other thing it said was, that massacre, yes, it was terrible, but it was one night out of thousands and thousands of years. And do you want to be identified as, for your entire life? Do you want to be identified by what happened to you in one night? And so, but it basically was giving me a little lecture on, well, I appreciate the attention paid to this. I mean, this is also the center of the universe. This is also, and what I would really want is, I want for there to be porcupines here, and I want for porcupines to make love here. I want for humans to make love here. It's like a woman who gets raped, then for the rest of her life, someone simply identifies her as a rape victim and ignores every other aspect. Yes, it affected her. It affected her deeply, but it doesn't define her. And so the land was saying, you know, don't define me by that, specifically by that. Define me by everything. And anyway, so I mainly brought that up because of the fact that I kept approaching from the south. I mean, the fact the south doesn't matter. The point is I was coming in without knowledge of the place. And man, it just kept insisting with dreams that it was going to, that I was going to pay attention. I need to get this and get rid of it. Hello? Telephone salesman.
Okay, no worries. I had a similar experience learning about the ghost dance. I used to take these trips to Yosemite and outside of Yosemite China Camp back when it was a little more abandoned. We'd be able to go to Hetch Hetchy, get my head straight, whatnot. Play music. And one time I came down and literally had this experience of going to this library and having a book, you know, reveal itself. And it wasn't on the ghost dance, but it led me to it. And what I came to learn was it was from what I had learned before, it happened at Wounded Knee or whatnot, but it actually started in California. The whole ghost dance, the phenomenon moved that way as we have learned now more history about this. And this is before a lot of that, our internet and knowledge and the way it's expanding for me to learn about, took me time. It was so visceral that I started exploring more into it and understanding this idea of people uplifting themselves in the land and dancing themselves in a trance to heal themselves, and how powerful that was, and how that literally, I think, scares some people. We're talking a spiritual end that is beyond the comprehension of science, let's say, even though it's measurable in the same sense if you wanted to change your tools a little. But I see this sort of more than just a cultural battle, a sort of nervousness of an energy that's playing its role in our world, if that makes sense. And it seems to me what we've learned is music is the best shortcut I know and how to understand it, if that means. But it really is long-term. Even though I'm saying shortcut, you get what I'm saying? You have to engage in a relationship with it.
I think last time we were talking, I mentioned the thing that Jeanette Armstrong said to me about how she was going to someone's home who had been abused and had just gotten away from an abuser. And through using music and symbols, she said, they would be able to more directly access her psyche and accomplish the same thing in a weekend that it would take about 10 years in therapy. And she wasn't suggesting this as a replacement for therapy.
Right.
She was simply saying that the point I took from this is using certain symbols, by which she didn't mean crash, crash. She meant S-Y-M-B-O-L-S. And using certain musical progressions, that can really open a person up. And then we also last time talked about me saying the thing about the rock and roller who went to Mongolia and was playing power chords, and kids, teenagers in Mongolia were responding to the power chords. It's a visceral opening.
Oh, yeah.
And so So I think we've talked about the power of music.
Well, I can come to the hummingbird part if you like. Yeah. So just to give you some scales of different things of what responds. Now, hummingbird, when I'm saying a harmonic, is a sort of in between the notes harmony, like a harmonic. It's the bell you hear. It's not necessarily, there could be a harmonic of any note. Okay. It's not a specific note. It's a very specific point, like on a guitar. It's the 12th fret. It's all the notes harmonizing into one. Does that make sense? That's your harmonic.
Harmonic is not the same as a chord. What I said was chord. So what's, I'm sure I'm not the only person who is sort of music illiterate. So can you, so what is the difference between a chord and a harmonic then?
So the chords is a group of notes put together that create another note that harmonizes together. Harmonics are in between. Imagine them as like an in-between note. They have a very specific sound. You've heard them. They ding rather than just like an F or a G or a C. You get what I'm saying? It's very in between. So a harmonic is a very specific resonance, as we call it. So much so, really, it's how we use it in electronics to test equipment. We use the testing of harmonics. We used to, like in tubes or older equipment, like how good is the sound that's coming through? We test its harmonics because that's the truest form of a note, basically. It's the truest resonance. You hear it in the universe even. It's like almost like the truest note of a G. A harmonic G is more of a G, I guess, in some ways. When you get into notes, we get into rhythm and tone. Rhythm falls into chord usage usually. Notes are used for melodies. That's how we understand them in those ways. In our modern context, we're not doing modal music anymore where I play one note and then progressively get to a place where we have many notes focusing around the one note. That's kind of an older way. We used to slowly come, like in the East, they're still into modal music. In the West, it's called polyphonic music. Big symphony, big way we hear opera or whatnot. It's what our ears are accustomed to. But if you really look into this, they're all really mimics of nature. This is what I've come to learn. Scales, rhythms, and everything, you can find them places. And like an Aeonian scale, the land of the Monkey King in India. If you go to this, supposedly, I've read it extensively in Belosky and other different things, the Aeonian scale, which is the lyre of Greece, with the F sharp in the middle, their specific harp that they played is in that scale, is actually in certain forests, and this one specifically is a bamboo, at a certain time, and a certain time when the moon is full, the winds come through and they blow this scale, and it's as intense as any classical place you've been to. And so this is technically where we're learning it from. And then science and different people have put these into things like growing food or soothing the brain, healing ancestors. We have, I mean, that list goes on. In our modern context, like you were bringing up about AC/DC or these bigger concerts, they're definitely a sort of toxic mimic, if you wanted to go there, of this phenomenon. Like we need it. Almost. It's like food. It's like, we're almost, I think on some levels we wouldn't survive without it actually. But what we're trying to do is discover this place and do long form music and show that this other element is what connects us, like plasma in the universe, so to speak.
So I'm going to take this in an entirely different direction for a minute. Okay. It reminds me of the work of Felicitas Goodman. What made me think of this is you were saying we need it. And I don't disagree with that at all. I think that we need, and we evolved hearing wind and trees.
Right.
And there's a couple things. One is a direction I wasn't going to go, but it's that John Livingston talked about how we are, for the most part, sensory deprived, not sensory overloaded, because everything we hear comes from one source, which is humans. It's either created or mediated by humans.
Right.
And so we start to hallucinate, he says, said, he's dead now. We start to hallucinate, and our ideologies are hallucinations based on sensory deprivation, which is why we think humans are the only ones who matter. I mean, right now, I'm sitting inside, so the only things I'm hearing are the hum of the computer and your voice mediated through God knows how many electronics. And I can look outside through glass, not directly, and I can see the trees are moving in the wind. So if I were sitting outside, I could be hearing those other sounds coming from other beings. Anyway, Felicitas Goodman, I mean, I just wanted to throw that in. Felicitas Goodman, she wrote about, you know, there's a lot of these cave paintings and a lot of figures on rock walls and figures on made out of pottery that a lot of people wouldn't quite understand the like why are the characters in the specific positions they're in, and what, and she had done a lot of work with a lot of what do you call them, sort of combo Catholic indigenous tradition churches.
Oh, right.
Okay. In Central America, Mexico, and what she eventually started to realize is that a lot of these paintings on walls were actually instructions, and they were instructions for people to assume and hold specific positions, which would then facilitate very specific and predictable trance experiences. So if you hold one position, you would pretty consistently enter the underworld. If you held another position in your trance, the hallucinations you have, visions, we can call them whatever we want.
Right.
The hallucinations / visions you would have would consistently be in the underworld. They would consistently be out in the air, or they would consistently include fire. So she did a very systematic examination of this with using the sort of the scientific method of double blind, where they would present this to people, have them assume a position, play music, which I'm going to throw this back to you in a moment, play music which would induce, help to speed up the process of inducing trance, and then the subjects would say their experiences without knowing that this was supposed to make you hallucinate underground. And it would then again be predictable. And one of the points, the reason I bring all that up is because one of her big deals was that she thinks that drug use, hypersexuality, consumerism, TVs, all this other stuff is in part a response to us being ecstasy deprived. And we need, and these were a standard part of human learning and a standard part of human experience up until recently.
Yes.
That's all.
Yes, no, I'm with you. Well, we'll get into an energy thing that you're even speaking of. Recently, you know, I've had these experiences, and it's why bringing it to this form of healing, I think, is really important. Even healing the land, I think, is important. Last year, I had a medical phenomenon where I compressed three discs, and I was pretty much looking at some serious problems. And I'm, you know, I I knew what the results were if I were to go to a hospital or do the things that are traditional at this point to deal with it. So it's not where I wanted to go, long story short. And in the long run, I want to cut it real short, had a really miraculous experience of uncompressing my own discs. And I'm about 93% healed now. So of course that gets anyone going in a certain direction. But my point is that there's obviously something going on inside of us that we have an ability to access these things you're talking about. And what I found is that it's plainly obvious you can do it with music. It's just how deep you want to go with it is really what it really to the person and how they're going to use it in their life. I think what you're talking about is exactly what I see with, I don't want to knock short music or pop music. But if you're using one of the most powerful tools in the universe for healing, and you're using it on these smaller levels, it's like bad drugs, really. You're not even really accessing the stuff that we're talking about. You don't need all these other things. If is what you're saying. And I'm agreement. I've seen it. I felt it, or I've seen it enacted. One great story for me is one of the experiments me and him has is we go play in a city and we would just let the city present us, and anybody that's walked in a city knows the city will interact with you in a very interesting way. We happened to be in Seattle. It was a key center, and it was a cultural day. It was hot. It was tense. There was going to riot. It was going to break out, and me and him walked right through it, and at that point, we looked at each other, and we're like, let's just play music right here, and we literally stopped the riot. Police came, thanked us. The people that were thinking of fighting were dancing, and it sounds innocuous, but like, that's a power, right? I mean, on some level, and how do you harmonize your situation is my point. That's where I went with it.
So this is pre-recorded, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, in a minute, just cut, and then I have to go. There's a bear banging on the door. So I have to go. That's why the dogs are barking. So I have to go deal with that. And I'll be back in like a minute.
No worries. Go for it. All right. Stay safe.
So I think that I was thinking about something that Dolores LaChapelle talked about in her work, that, you know, everybody in every community is going to end up disliking each other at some point. You know, we humans are fundamentally contentious, and we will get in spats. And you need for ways to come back together in community. And yeah, there can be conflict resolution methods and all that, but one of the ways is through what she called entrainment. And that's through chanting, drumming, singing. And churches know this. I mean, that's why you sing together. Mm-hmm. And how when you are singing together or chanting together or dancing together, and I'm not talking about shaking your booty, you know, trying to, there is something profoundly connecting. And so, but we've been talking about music, and can you give a little lecture on, like, when we say long form music, how long are we talking? Are we talking an hour? Are we talking a day? Are we talking a week, a lifetime? Are we talking 1,000 years? I mean, what?
Right. I think there's where I would start is depending on what the intention or the goal is, they could vary. For example, with ragas, you know, there it will be 3 hours is nothing. Like, we're not accustomed to that here, say, in the West. Like, 3 hours is like, you know, or maybe a concert. You might go to a classical concert that lasts 3 hours. But that's just getting started. It's just getting started. They really are sessions that last 6 and 7 hours. And these are guru practices that take certain notes, certain spans of astrological things. Like, for example, I always like to throw out to people, if you know a lunation cycle in astrology, you understand it's 2 hours. It just happens to be a movie. We have cycles that we naturally adhere to. Whether we like it or not, they're magnetic, they're around us, the moon, the different things, they all have these cycles. Astrology isn't just about predicting your future, it's about us understanding the vibration around you, the energies that come through. Like, we're just coming out of a Pluto, say, a big turn that went for two, it just so happened to be what they call the birth of the Declaration of Independence. Did they do it on purpose? I don't know. But apparently people understand star things, and we're just leaving it now. That's 244 years of a certain kind of vibration that's coming through the universe. And I think every culture's understood this. I don't care what construct they've used, whether it be twigs or books or mathematics. I think we all have the access to it. What I even understand about Hermeticism, sort of indigenous knowledge of Europe, is music was used specifically for this. This was our gifts from our ancestors to move within the music of the spheres and to be balanced and harmonized with the universe rather than being opposed to it. So I can totally understand what you're saying. So, like, say 5 minutes might be, I need juice to move to the store. I need a little juice to, on my Walkman, to go 5 minutes. So you get a 5 minute thing. I think that's the modern use. But what if I wanted to, understand how a certain fruit grows? Well, I'd have to be in its time. So you might pick a certain time to understand it and put yourself in that trance. That's just one method I'm saying. I personally, we work within vibrations of liminal spaces. It's where we're most open. Those are the evening or the morning. Those are places for emotions to get worked out. Like what you were speaking about. If I have mental spat with someone, these are the ideal spaces where we come, and it's very common, and we can work through these emotions. So they're very human, if you want to put it that way. Through emotions, these liminal spaces. Other things belong to earthly realms, or other things belong to solar realms or water realms. So they'll have different time things, different signatures. Does that help?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Thanks. And I'm thinking about, I'm thinking a few things. One of them is that when I talk about long-form thinking, it's not necessarily, for me at least, I mean, I don't write a book in a burst of 8 hours, nor in the year it takes me to write a book am I working on it all the time. But I am, but usually I think about it more like fishing, that I've got the line in the water, but I'm not actively doing anything. And I could actually be doing something else. I could be reading a book. It's just like fishing. I could be reading a book, but the line's in the water. And if I feel the line twitch, then I focus on it.
Right.
And then I'm thinking about my experience of church when I was a kid, where I would, you know, doodle on the program and, you know, do all sorts of other things to try to keep myself interested. And then I was thinking of, we used to do these weekend events called Deep Green Resistance, where you would do all sorts of, we would do all sorts of exercises. Anyway, the point is that one time this person brought like a five or six year old kid. And, the parents happened to be native. I don't remember what nation, Navajo maybe. Anyway, they, when they brought the kid, we're like, you know, these are long sessions where we're doing like adult things. Mm-hmm. I mean, not adult like adult has become to mean, but adult like.
Yes, I got you.
Like, you know, talking about intense issues. And they said, oh, don't worry. She's been going to ceremonies since she was a baby, so she can sit still for like 6 and 10 hours. And the kid was delightful. The kid would just draw during, you know, when we're talking about things. And then as soon as the event, as soon as that particular 3-hour session would be over, the kid, of course, is just running around the Zoom room like crazy and being a 5-year-old.
Right.
And when the next time comes, boop, the kid was really well. But the point is, so if I'm supposed to, listen to that word, if I'm supposed to listen to a song that is, you know, 5 hours long, I mean, I don't mean to be a jerk. Like, I can read a book and I read and then I put it down and I read and I put it down. And maybe this is a failing in me, but if I'm listening to a song, like, do I get to stop and read? Or do I have to, like, I don't know if I can maintain focus that long.
Right, right. No, I feel you. I guess, you know.
So is this a failing in me?
No, absolutely not. Concentration in these realms are really hard. Even to the idea, I'll just use like, nutmeg is a hallucinogenic, right? But it'll kill you if you took a whole bunch of it. You'd have to take a little bit at a time and then you get your body used to it. And after a couple of weeks, it's not something I would recommend anyone out there doing. You would have hallucinogenic experiences. So to me, like the kind of realms I'm speaking about, especially for those of us who have been entrained in a certain way, it would take time. And you would have, personally, we're in the process of trying to figure what that is for us in the West. That's what I'm trying to discover, use patterns that we know, the different things I've learned, and how do I keep us in this state for, say, for me, just 3 hours or 2 hours is what I'm shooting for. I couldn't, 5 hours is, I wouldn't demand that of someone unless you can really sit in a, just go to a drum circle for 5 hours and try that. You get what I'm saying? So I don't think it's a failing. I think, and I actually don't really even recommend it for somebody to do all the time. I think it's something you should work yourself train yourself. This is my opinion, train yourself so that you get something out of it that you're looking for deep inside. If that makes any sense, that would be my approach.
No, I like it. I'm wondering. I'm just wondering where where I'm wondering where the long form. I mean, this has made me really question, you know, when I talk about long form thinking, I'm not really meaning that you sit there and you focus on the thing for 10 hours straight. That's not how I work at all. And I mean, how I work on is like, or another way to think about it, I think about it like a cow chewing its cud, that
right.
I'll think actively about something and then I put it down to be digested and then I bring it back up and I chew on it some more.
Right.
Then I swallow it again and let it digest. And so for me, it ends up, and I've never thought of it this way before. I mean, I keep saying long form thinking, yes, but long form thinking doesn't demand that you sit there and focus until drops of blood form on your forehead for,
right.
It's a longer, and.
Well, there's this term. I've heard many musicians express it, and it's kind of like this weird thing, probably like devices for writers. All of us that do music, I think we know internally that all we're really doing is engaging in something that's always there. We're not really, it's a parade of music and vibration that's happening, and it's just like when you're track recording. Once you bring another instrument in and you bring another note in, you change it a little. It's all changed just by that one person, and it's more of that kind of assemblance and weaving that is the longer form I see in it.
Yeah, and I guess we also have to acknowledge that we are animals. We are not either plants or rocks. And I mean, I love this forest very, very much where I live. But honestly, if I had to sit in front of one tree for 20 years, that doesn't really interest me. And I'm an animal. I move around. Trees have to sit there next to their neighbors for 2,000 years, which suggests to me that they're very good at conflict resolution. and stones say, you want to hear about conflict resolution, buddy. I got to stay here for a million years.
Right.
And so I think for me, I mean, one of the things that's happening in this conversation for me is that I'm revisiting long form thinking and bringing my own mobility into it.
Right.
The long form thinking, I haven't really said long form thinking is sitting staring at one thing. In fact, for me, writing is very peripatetic. And, I get a lot of my ideas when out on walks through the forest. And so I'm actually mobile and interacting with all sorts of different beings and not sitting. So that's the thing, is that I'm not trying to tell musical people how to do their thing,
sure.
But it's like the way I could really keep focused on, and this is just me, on a musical thing for 5 hours would be if the music was following me through a forest as I was walking.
Right. Right.
It's kind of like, and I think this, I don't want to generalize this too much, because I remember when I was a kid, my siblings were like 8, 9, and 10 years older than I was. And I remember when I was a kid, my sisters, when they were teenagers, used to like to sunbathe. And this always struck me, and continues. I'm 59 years old now, and it still strikes me as just weird. I didn't mind lying in the grass, in the sun, reading a book. That's really nice.
Uh-huh.
But lying in the grass, not asleep, but doing nothing, drove me bonkers.
Uh-huh.
So I've always been a little bit, I require additional stimulation, then I don't think I would be the best person at sort of a sitting meditation in a room.
Sure.
I could do sitting. People have asked me for decades, gosh, Derek, you meditate. And it's like, no, I go sit in the forest. And that's not meditation, because I'm not like focusing on my breathing or anything else. I'm like, wow, that's a pretty tree. And wow, that's a cool little ant. And here's a nice little gnat. I'm just looking at the stuff around me. And so it feels, I've always felt kind of like I'm hyperactive that way, that
it's a little bit. I totally see what you're saying. Yeah. Well, this gets into the realms of, though, there are different forms of meditation, and they have to do with wavelengths in our mind. So I know traditionally people say here in this side of the world, think of meditation, I'll sit like the Buddha, I'm going to meditate for an hour. Well, that's one form, but there are hundreds of other. I mean, dancing's a meditation, walking's a meditation. So maybe it's our perspective has to shift on some level, even because even I'm kind of discovering in music. I feel the same way. How do we transmit this information without across the spectrum who have different ways of receiving the information? And we are in a transitional time, I think, of discovering what these patterns are in some way. This has happened to us before, when we went from oration to reading the book. And that must have been just strange for people of these new people who read all this information in their heads and suddenly it's coming from that place and not from this, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're in the same kind of thing right now in some ways with this access to even music at our fingertips. I mean, you'd have to go to a place or.
Oh, I was thinking about this, 2 days ago, because 2 days ago, Ennio Morricone died.
Okay.
And, he's very famous for the theme songs for the spaghetti westerns and a bazillion other. And
phenomenal, actually.
What?
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal music.
Yeah. And so that night, I had to rewatch The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And I was thinking about this, about how when I was a kid, a movie was an event.
Right.
And it was also normally completely out of your control, that you could go see it at first run or you could go see it in a revival theater, but it's only when it's there.
Right.
And I remember having a discussion with some fellow students when I was freshman or sophomore in college about music recording and interestingly, they were taking the very Luddite perspective that I take now of they were thinking that musical recordings are actually harmful to music itself for exactly the reason we're talking about, that it becomes not an event, but something that you can have on demand. You can play the record anytime you want, as opposed to once every 18 months when Led Zeppelin comes to town and they play Stairway to Heaven.
Right. Right.
I can literally play it over and over until anybody within 100 yards wants to kill me.
Right. Right. And I would imagine you've been around enough music that there's obviously a difference when you experience a musician expressing something in real time. It's just, we all know it's different. It's just
right.
The vibration, and that's in itself, even a concert is long form music because everybody's having that experience together there. It doesn't even compare. And even this is what Jerry Garcia talked about. You can never get that in the groove. He used to say the record, you can't get it in the groove. It doesn't quite get there. But if you've been there and you experience it and listen to it, you even incite the emotion a little bit. Like, oh yeah, that day I was with my friend and it was a beautiful sunset and I could still smell the roses or whatever was inciting your, like all that. That's like once removed. So this synthetic thing you're talking about is, and let's not even get into, synthetic music, metronome keyboards creating these vibrations that technically are synthetic. Even as a musician, I love to write and use that stuff, but I know as an artist, that's not the experience. There's no way to crunch those numbers in that computer world to have that biochemical experience. If that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm thinking, you know, when I was 18 to 25 or 30 or something, I used to love to go to concerts. I went to a boatload of concerts. And I had exactly the experience you're thinking of that you were talking about. And it was so funny because even when the band was really ragged, and I mean that in the negative sense, not...
Mm-hmm.
It's like that was still a better experience, even if the singer is just singing terribly, and yes. You know the guitar player is falling over drunk,
right.
Everybody's doing a crap job. It's still that was an entirely different experience than listening to the album, which might have been with them on their best behavior and doing it 50 times to get it right.
Right.
And musically. The album was much better, and like I said, live, they couldn't even hold a tune. It was still a completely different experience, and more positive experience in live.
Right. No, and you're even, in our time when we grew up too, I mean, if you want to get into the whole commercial industry and musicians expressing themselves, there was this wiggle room to have artist development. And that's kind of left, you know, like the story to tell, like, you know, Bo Diddley telling his story at 50 was far more interesting live probably than when he was 20. There are little things of that nature that we were exposed to. It's not so relevant or prevalent, if you want to say, these days. It's a very removed situation. It's not expressing our culture. So there are different stories that are playing out. I think personally we're going back to that, and I think because of what's happening in our environment right now, we're being forced to, in some ways, which I think could be a positive thing. Maybe I don't know. To learn to slow down, know what's coming inside of us, how to deal with these energies or whatnot. As an artist right now, we're beginning to develop more because we have time. So what we're expressing has more sustenance to it? Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I'm thinking something else too, that something just occurred to me that, so back before it became illegal in the United States, I used to play a fair amount of online poker, back 2007, 2008.
Okay.
I was actually pretty good. I ended up maybe, I don't know, $1,000, $1,500, something like that.
And
I mean, I wasn't great or anything. I never would have been good enough to be real, but I was okay. And I remember reading what one poker player said about never worrying about whether you, I mean, obviously it's a very small margin, so you can just get, you can lose really bad one day and then win really great the next day. And he said, you can't look at it session by session. You have to look at it that life is one big session.
Mm.
And that resonated with me in part because I've always looked at all of my books as basically one giant book.
Mm-hmm.
And, I do these things that are completely separate on different topics, but I've always looked at them as parts of a larger whole. And I wonder, and I'm going to have to go in a couple minutes, but I'm wondering how what I just said relates to what we're talking about in terms of long form music.
Well, it completely relates. I don't think I've had a song that I finished yet. They're always evolving or come back in some way that they get reused or repatternized or something to express in a different way. They're like words, you know, and you rearrange them or whatnot, but it's a longer thing you're trying to express, whatever your thing you're expressing inside, like you're talking about. We've said the same thing in our music when we do talk. I don't do a lot of it or sing. Same stuff all the time, just in different ways. But it's always the same thing, you know, these energies that I'm speaking about and how they're playing a role in our lives, so to speak.
Well, I feel like we've done part two of this exploration, or part three, or whatever part this is, but I feel like a lot more, and I would love to continue this another time.
Yeah, let's do that. I do too. I think this is a good start.
Yeah, and maybe this is manifesting the long-form thinking and long-form music thing, because the thing I'm getting stuck at with the long-form music, which I don't with long-form thinking, is, oh my God, I have to sit there for 12 hours straight listening
right.
to this over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And
no, I feel you. And it is, it's a dilemma for all of us here, right? I mean,
but I love listening to the music. I mean, to the music of the trees. I love listening to the trees, but honestly, I don't sit and listen to them for 12 hours straight either. I listen to them for 20 years straight in parts, and they inform my every day, but I don't. And again, maybe this is a failing on my part, or maybe I don't know what, but I don't.
I think it's discovering a language. Even when you're talking to me about it, it's one of the things that music has done for me is there's these certain things that I can hear that allows me to understand nature more. So like when I start training myself to learn notes in a certain way or certain patterns, I notice it. And when the wind's blowing through a certain thing and certain notes, and it gives me sort of a language to be like, oh, well, that's, for example, that's reverb coming from the mountain over there. There must be a tunnel. There must be wind blowing through a tunnel. And I know that's an hour away, right? Because I can hear it. So it's so subtle on that level is my point. That it's hard to, you're not seeing it in that form right away. You know what I'm saying? Like you're just kind of floating around. I heard these notes over and over, but then suddenly you're in this situation where it's like a key. You're like, oh, I know what that is.
Well, so, okay. Thank you for saying all that, because you just helped me with something else too, that I can read a book for hours, but I know the language. And if I were looking at a book written in Arabic, not knowing those patterns, because language is nothing but patterns.
Right.
So the reason that I can look at this and have it mean something to me is because I know that this shape is a capital A.
Right.
But if it were Arabic, I couldn't look at it for 30 seconds and I'd be done. Or it doesn't matter. It's not Arabic. I mean, it could be Korean. It could be.
Sure.
Cyrillic. It could be, you know, I could probably last a little bit longer on Italian because I might be able to make something out.
But, right. Well, the phonic alphabet, like for, yeah. Right.
Yeah. So the point is that if I had been trained to be able to understand the language of those single note progressing to multiple notes over hours, okay. I don't know if I told you this before, but when I was going to all those concerts, I went to see Miles Davis. That's one of the people I saw. Well, here's the thing, is I went to that concert with a friend of mine who was a musician, and he was sitting in the chair next to me having basically visible orgasms. He's just, that's even better. And I'm like, there's a guy up there puffing out his cheeks, you know, it's like, I couldn't appreciate it because, I mean, you say, oh wow, it's like, yeah, there's a guy playing a trumpet, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I didn't know the language. I didn't know the language to appreciate. It's like, I know baseball well enough to know when I see a spectacular catch
It's like, wow,
oh, that's something. But somebody else is like, well, he caught the ball. What's the big deal?
I know.
That's my point is that if I could see sitting there for 12 hours in rap if I knew the language. But that's the thing is I don't. So it's the same thing with nature, that if we start to perceive the language, then it becomes easier and easier. I mean, I know people who walk through a forest and they spend 30 seconds and they're already bored. And I've been walking this forest for 20 years and I'm not bored.
Right. Right.
So I think a lot of it has to do with learning that language and learning. Well, and also it has to do with love. You know, I think, yeah. I mean, this is probably way too much information, but I would think that, I'm just thinking about something that Randy Schultz talked about in his book And the Band Played On about why. That book is about the early AIDS crisis. And one of the things he talks about is a bathhouse culture. Right. And in there, at one point, he talks about, he sees somebody doing, with his arm up to here, up somebody else's anus.
Right. As we call fisting. I grew up in the Castro. Very aware of what you're talking about.
So basically he asks, how could someone end up doing this?
Right.
And his answer, which I thought was fabulous, was if you remove emotion from sexuality, it starts to get boring. And you need to have some other form of stimulation take up the infinite complexity of another being. So
right.
If you're actually getting to know another being, there remains complexity in your relationship. And this is true. That example was sex, but we can use this everywhere. We can use this. This is why the forum had to get more and more extreme. This is why movies have to get more and more extreme.
Right.
We can probably say the same thing about music.
Oh, absolutely.
If you're participating in, you know, this is just Martin Buber's I and You, I Thou. Because if you're in a relationship with another being, that other being is infinitely complex. And you can continue to explore that, and the learning curve remains very steep, and the learning curve, and so you don't have to get bored if you're always still exploring that infinite complexity. But if you're not in relationship, but instead you're a spectator, basically, so that's what Randy Schultz was talking about, really, was being a spectator even in your own sex.
Right.
As opposed to being a full participant in your sexuality. And if you're a spectator, then, as Du Bois talked about, the spectacle has to become greater and greater.
Right.
And so, what's my point? My point is, I've known people who have walked through a forest and get bored in 10 seconds. But if you're open to the relationships, and I think then the same thing applies to music, that if you're, and I'm thinking about this with myself too, and I'm not beating myself up for, if I were in that situation where the person starts off with one note and me starting to get bored pretty quickly, I'm not blaming myself for that. I'm starting to observe some of the conditions surrounding it.
Okay.
And for me, that's the essence. I mean, what we're doing in this conversation is long form thinking and long form music, really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm misusing the term music there though, because this was not, it's not long form music because it's not music at all.
Right. If we're harmonizing, it's technically music.
Yeah, but you can say that, but I can't because you're a musician. And I'm not going to say it because I don't want to step in there and devalue that resonance.
Okay.
That physical resonance, not the emotional resonance, but the physical resonance that comes with a note.
I see.
One of the things that I always said, even when I was 20, one of the reasons I liked the rock concerts, I would go and I would wear earplugs because they were so loud, but I enjoyed the bass notes actually penetrating my torso.
Of course.
Well, I need to go, but I want you, before I go, I want you to say why you just said of course.
Well, the bass vibration that comes through is the lowest chakra there is, and we all know it feels good down there. And any vibration, especially those lower notes, they come straight to what they call the lowest chakra. It feels good. It does feel good. All of us that have a lower torso that is excited by vibration. I'll end it on one story. I saw a great bass player that actually set up his glasses and everything for his bass for real low frequencies. And I was happened to be there a couple hours, Ron Brown playing his, you know, upstanding bass. And the guy literally set up glasses to know and sit in a certain place, play his bass note, could knock the glass off the table. So if he didn't like something during the night, he could literally make things move with his bass. He was really into these tricks, as we would call them. So that's why I say, of course.
That's great. I love it. Well, thank you so much. This has been really fun.
Absolutely. Thank you, Derek. We'll continue some more on this.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Talk to you soon.
All right, man. Peace.